Me and my pal Barney are putting together a little sports entertainment event this weekend.
There are some words that we just have decided we will not say all the time.
You know what I mean? It's just like we've decided there be some words we won't say all the time. And I was just trying to find out which words they were. For sure. All of them. I wanted a list. Because nobody gives you a list. That's the problem. They don't give you a list. Wouldn't you think it'd be normal if they didn't want you to say something to tell you what it is? Nobody even tells you when you're a kid what the words are that you're supposed to avoid. You have to say them to find out which ones they are.
Wrestler. Wrestling.
That's two.
Please, Ma, give me a list, huh?
All right, you're 6 years old now, and here's the list of words your dad and I don't ever want to hear you say.
Professional wrestler. Wrestling ring. Wrestler.
Wrestler.
Shut up!
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a streak!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
Do you believe that shit? Fred Flintstone can't even say the word wrestling. He can't even say, you know, Bonnie and I are going to put together a wrestling event. Or even just say, Bonnie and I are putting together a bunch of matches. No, we're putting together a little sports entertainment event. Hey guys, want to get tickets to the sports entertainment show this weekend? What's that? It's wrestling. Well then why didn't you just say that? I imagine that's how a lot of those conversations would go if they ever actually happen, which they won't. That will not ever happen. People will never start doing that. No matter how hard Vince McMahon tries, it will never, ever happen. There is so much self-loathing going on there, it's not even funny. This is episode 380 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, April 26, 2015, Extreme Rules Sunday. I am the Solid Monster. I told you guys that if I watched The Marine 4, I would give my thoughts on it. I did watch The Marine 4 with The Miz and Summer Rae. Even they make it seem in the commercials like they're on the same side, they're blowing shit up. I will say, if you are into these kind of brainless action movies like I am, it's a good movie. For what it's supposed to be, it's good. It's fine. There's nothing overly special about it. It's not the worst movie I've ever seen. It won't win any Oscars, I can tell you that much. And for the record, The Miz and Summer Rae are on opposite ends of the spectrum. The Miz is the hero. Summer Rae is one of the villains. She has very little dialogue in the movie. And I won't spoil anything beyond that in case you actually want to check it out. But again, it wasn't horrible. The Miz was fine. I saw The Miz in The Marine 3, and I actually remember reviewing it on the show at that time. And I even said, you know, The Miz was not as horrible as I thought he would be. So that's, I guess, the best compliment I can pay the guy. Summer Rae, like I said, she didn't really have much to say. She just kind of stood there and blew shit up. But anyway, so that's my very quick review of The Marine 4. If you don't watch it, you're not missing much. But if you do, there's a lot of shooting. I will say that. A lot of bullets went to waste during this movie. Lots and lots of shooting and indiscriminate violence. So if you're into that sort of thing, it's about 90 minutes. You know, it's an easy way to kill time. But on the subject of The Marine, the WWE Fan Council sent another survey out this week, and I am proud to be able to take these surveys when they come out. Don't ask me how to become part of the Fan Council. I'm still not sure how I became part of it. But they sent another one of their surveys out, and this one was about WWE films. And so they were asking a lot of questions about the kind of movies that you like and what you thought of all the current WWE films up to this point, which ones you liked, which ones you've seen. But when it came to the last question of the survey, and those of you who follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster, you saw this, so you already know where I'm going with this. The last question in the survey that they posed was, please select all the characteristics that you might use to describe WWE. And they gave a laundry list of different things. And I'm going to go through every single one of them here. Because I think, first of all, you'll see as I go through the options here, this is a very bizarre question. Like, there was a question where they actually asked to kind of give the characteristics of yourself. So, do you find yourself to be a kind person, a funny person, an athletic person, all these different things. But then they asked it about WWE, as though WWE is like an actual being. It's like, it's a person. If WWE were a person, if they were an individual, how would you describe them? It's just a very bizarre question. But these are the different options they gave as to how you can describe WWE. Now, for the record, of all of the options I'm going to name here, I chose three. So if you didn't see the tweet I sent out, I'll wait till the end. I'll let you figure out which three I picked. But this is what they, these are the options they gave. Passionate, talented, funny, athletic, rebellious. Yes, because if there's one thing about WWE, it's how rebellious they are, like a teenager. Innovative, modest, which is one of the funnier options. Yeah, WWE is a modest organization. Sure, sure. Except for all those did you know facts they pepper us with every single week and telling us they've got, you know, 100 million downloads for the app and they were number one on this and they were number one on that and they beat out every single network when you combine the ratings, but they're very modest. Authentic. Adventurous. Flexible. That's the one that puzzled me the most. When I think of WWE, I don't think of them as flexible. Unless they're doing, you know, DDP yoga or something. How the fuck can an organization be flexible? And for the record, there's nothing about WWE that I think is flexible, especially I think if you work for them. In fact, I think they're pretty damn inflexible. But that's one of the options here. Dramatic, confident, heroic, engaging, playful. WWE is playful. Different. Well, they sure as hell are that. I actually didn't mark that off. Maybe I would have. They are different. Kind, cheerful, sweet, surprising, disciplined. Oh, this is the best one here. Creative. That is priceless. That is priceless. Action-packed, caring, brave, assertive, sexy. I don't know if I find WWE very sexy. Generous, professional, faithful, like a fucking dog, I guess. In control. Well, that's not true. They change their mind all the time. Impulsive. There you go. Should have marked that one off. Family friendly. I don't know how family friendly you can call yourself, even with a PG rating, when you have people going out on television using the word bitch and ass and, you know. Are they really that family friendly? I think they try to have it both ways. You can't have it both ways. You're one or the other. So I didn't mark that one off. Calm. Entertaining, that's up for debate. Considerate, dedicated, thoughtful, sophisticated, fun-loving, colorful, exciting, courageous, over-the-top, balanced, and international. I feel like this is like WWE is going on like a speed date. This is like if you were dating WWE, you'd have to fill out a survey like this. What is this? What is this nonsense? For the record, of all those options, I marked off athletic, over-the-top, and international. That's it. Those are the only ones I filled out. I thought about marking down funny, but, you know, they could be funny for all the wrong reasons. More often than not, though, when they try to be funny, they're not, so I didn't mark it off. This is a real survey question here. Again, you would think you were going on a date. I have no interest in dating WWE. They're clingy, they're painfully unfunny, and all they do is talk about themselves. They're not my type. Thank you to everybody also, I forgot to mention this earlier, who left some nice comments and messages. I mentioned last week I was making the road trip out to Pennsylvania, finally, to get to my father's place. And I can tell you this, Pennsylvania is a long state. It is a long state. Like, I can get from where I am here in New York to Philadelphia in probably, you know, 90 minutes. But to get to this part of Pennsylvania took 4.5 hours. Actually, it took closer to 5 hours to get out there. We hit a monsoon about half an hour away. Windswept rains, the likes of which you've never seen before. So, yeah, it is a big state with a lot of long, boring roads, a long, boring interstate. Connecticut's kind of the same way. I-95, anybody who goes down there knows it's freaking boring. But took care of what I needed to take care of. It was certainly a day that was exhausting in a lot of ways. I won't even begin to get into what happened over the course of the day and the different things I did, found, all the different things. It was just a very draining day. I think draining would be a good word for it. And when I tell you that this place was out in the middle of nowhere, I'm not lying. A lot of nice people, you know, some of the nicest people you'll ever meet in that little community there. You know, the city that he's in, you know, has a population based on the last census, literally a population of like 1,700 people. So you get into this city after you get off the interstate, and you're on this like one long road, two lanes, very narrow, and on either side of you, just wide open field, cows grazing, horses. I think I saw a goat or a boar or something in there somewhere, like an abandoned shack. You know, it was crazy. It was not what I was expecting. And as somebody who comes from New York City, it was quite the culture shock, I think, to be in that area and to see how freaking deep in there he was. Anyway, it was a long trip. I'm happy it's over and I finally had the chance to get out there and do what I had to do. And unfortunately, there are other issues now that I need to deal with. Maybe I'll mention that later in the show. You know, if it's not one thing, it's the other. But thank you for all the kind comments and messages. And even the people who lived in Pennsylvania who said they weren't that far away and they offered to help in any way. That's really cool. Again, I didn't want to impose on anybody, but as it turned out, I didn't need any help. But thank you very much for the offer. I appreciate that. I'm going to talk about this also later in the show. But if you are not watching Lucha Underground, then shame on you, because it is the best wrestling show on television today. Even better than NXT, I would put Lucha Underground easily at number one. It has become my favorite wrestling show of any kind. The main event of this week's show was outstanding. Outstanding. If you don't have El Rey Network, guess what? Neither do I. You can find it online like I do. And then you can watch it on your TV. You can watch it on your smartphone, your laptop, whatever. I've watched it on all three at different times. Just do yourself a favor and watch it. If you don't like the cinematic way that it's shot, I know some of you guys weren't really a big fan of that when you checked it out. Look, I didn't like that either at first. That was kind of a turnoff for me too. But I got over that real quick. And now I love it. Just give it a chance. You know, after the week that I had, I came home, I watched that show, and it cheered me right back up. Put a big smile on my face. I think it will for you too. The Podbean app is free for the iPhone. Those of you who have asked constantly, do you have an iPhone app? We don't. We have our own dedicated app for the Google Play Store. It's in there for Android devices. It is free. For iPhone, there is no dedicated SoundOff app yet, but you can download the Podbean app and stream us that way if you want to. You can also stream the show in Stitcher, the Stitcher Radio app. Every time you do that, it helps our ranking. We've been atop the sports charts numerous times over the last several months. So please keep streaming us on Stitcher as well. Audible, audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our custom URL. We are approaching the end of April. This is the final week in the month of April that people can sign up for Audible. And I want to get our numbers up a little bit. So please use audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Use that link to sign up. You can sample the service free for 30 days. You will not be billed. Check it out. If you want to cancel, you can cancel at any time. And you get to keep one free audio book. You get one free book either way, but even if you cancel, you get to keep it. They won't bill you. So you have absolutely nothing to lose, and all you're doing, besides getting something for free, and who doesn't want stuff for free, you're helping the podcast out. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster. There are tons of wrestling books up there, including the Junkyard Dog book, which I hear is kind of interesting. There's a Hulk Hogan book, a Lex Luger book, Dusty Rhodes, Shawn Michaels' new book is on there, Chris Jericho's third book, which I highly recommend. Two thumbs up on that. That's on there, too. And they're all audiobooks, for those of you who are not familiar with it, hence the word Audible. So you can listen to them at home. You can listen to them in the car, in the truck, at the gym, at school, wherever. You know, if your girlfriend is talking to you and you don't, you know, you kind of tune her out, you can put your headphones in and listen to your audiobook, whatever. Don't tell them, by the way, I told you to do that. So audibletrial.com/Solomonster is our link. Please use that. If you would like to make a PayPal donation, which is the most direct way to support this show, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal box on the right-hand side. I'm sorry I don't have the mechanism in there yet for you to make recurring donations. So all of you who do make recurring donations, do so manually. You just keep going back to the website and doing it. I know it's kind of a pain in the ass, but I appreciate the hell out of you for it. Hopefully at some point we'll have that option where you can put in for a recurring donation that's automatic. But you can make a donation anytime you want to on thesolemonster.com. $10 or more, we'll get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out. $30 or more, we'll get you that same nickname and shout-out, plus a very brief plug for your own podcast. So please send that information in to me when you make your donation. Thank you this week to Chuck Lunatic Lentz, the Florida Freebird, Bryant Becerra, Matt Game Over Geferta, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, Intense Isaac Soaladab, Timu the Tyrant, Asakainen, and Christopher Pimp Daddy Purington. Thank you to everybody who made a donation this week. Again, please keep doing so on thesolemonster.com. That's what keeps this show going here. And also, you can buy a shirt in our store, prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. Just type in the full name of the show. We've got 19 different t-shirt designs and counting up in the store. They ship all over the world up to a size 5XL. So no matter how big or small you may be, there is a shirt for you with your name on it in there. So head on over to prowrestlingtees.com/solemonstersoundsoff. Want to sell a few more shirts here before April is out. So if you were thinking about buying one, help us out here for the month of April. Go ahead, don't waste any more time and buy a shirt. Tonight is WWE Extreme Rules on the WWE Network for free. So even though it's a pay-per-view, it's really not. Live from Chicago, Illinois, so probably a hot crowd. One of the better crowds WWE usually has is in Chicago, and they can be very unforgiving, so you never know what you're going to get with a Chicago crowd. Let's go through the card here from the bottom and work our way up to the top. On the pre-show, we have Tyson Kidd and Cesaro, who I guess are being positioned here as babyfaces, taking on The New Day for the Tag Team Championship. Second month in a row, by the way, the Tag Team titles are relegated to the kickoff show. I'm going to go with The New Day here. Not because I want them to win, because I like what Kidd and Cesaro have going. I think they've got great chemistry. They've got a good thing going with the belts. But obviously, they're starting to get behind The New Day with this heel turn. And I think a Tag Team title switch over to them may help get them over that hump, may get them more heat. You know, if they win the titles and now they're even more kind of over the top than they usually are. So I think that's where we may be headed. I'm going to go with The New Day here as the new champs. We've got Dean Ambrose and Luke Harper in a Chicago street fight where the loser can no longer wear jeans. Now, do you realize that if Dean Ambrose wins this match, it would be his first singles win on a pay-per-view since Night of Champions in September of 2013. I could not believe that when I looked it up, but it's true. That's how long it's been. September 2013, Night of Champions, when he beat Dolph Ziggler to retain the U.S. title. And it would be his first win of any kind on a pay-per-view since Payback in June of last year when the Shield beat Evolution. So, yeah, I think Ambrose is due for a win. So is Luke Harper, frankly, but they're both losers. Dean needs it more. I'm going to go with Dean Ambrose here in this match. We have Dolph Ziggler and Sheamus in a Kiss Me Arse match. I saw that Dolph Ziggler put up some controversial tweets or a controversial message on Instagram. You know, I don't know whether it's just to hype up the match or if I'm sure there is some legitimate frustration there, but I don't think Dolph Ziggler went on Instagram and just started shooting on WWE. The way I read that, it was all part of this build to this match. A match that he will lose, and he will end up kissing Sheamus' ass. Sheamus is my pick. We have Nikki Bella defending the Divas Championship against Naomi. I'm going to go with Naomi here. Nikki's had that title for a long time now, and Naomi's getting the big push as the heel. The Bellas, this is kind of like the tag team situation. They kind of mirror each other in that Kidd and Cesaro are almost, I mean, certainly they're getting babyface reactions, but they're almost in this match being positioned as the babyfaces. And the New Day are the new guys getting a push as heels. And so that's why I think they put the titles on them. I'm going to say the same thing in this situation. Nikki and Brie never did turn face, but that's kind of how they're being positioned here. They're being positioned as the baby faces. Naomi is the heel. They're trying to get her over. They're trying to get something going here. I think that Naomi takes the Divas Championship, so she's my pick. Oh, and by the way, the other reason why it makes sense to do that is because if Naomi wins the title, and they give her a nice little run with the championship, when Paige comes back, she has a ready-made feud for the championship with Naomi. So it just makes sense. Although, making sense is not exactly their forte, but I'll give them a little bit of leeway on this. Daniel Bryan and Bad News Barrett, tentatively scheduled for the Intercontinental Championship. Last time I checked, the match was still listed on WWE.com, A lot of the reports I'm seeing is that Bryan may be out for another 4 or 5 weeks. If that's the case, he will not be wrestling on this show. So, you know, I don't know if the match is even happening or not. If the match is happening, then that must mean Bryan is healthy enough to go. If he's healthy enough to go, he's my pick. Because if this were just a match and there was no concern over Bryan's health, there wouldn't even be a thought in my mind that they would put the belt back on Barrett. So Daniel Bryan is my pick if the match happens. I'm not sure it is. But if it does, he's my pick. We then have a Russian chain match for the United States Championship. John Cena against Rusev in a WrestleMania rematch. Against the rules here are, the rules here are that you have to touch all four turnbuckles in succession to win the match. John Cena is my pick. He will retain the United States Championship. They'll keep that open challenge gimmick going, which I like. I like the open challenge gimmick. I think they should keep it going for a few more months. No reason to switch the belt back to Rusev here. And it's a way for Rusev, even though he loses but doesn't have to get pinned. So John Cena is the winner. Last man standing. Big Show against Roman Reigns. I've made no bones about the fact that I am sick to death of seeing the Big Show and Roman Reigns in matches together. I do not ever have to see the Big Show and Roman Reigns go one-on-one again. But it's a last man standing match. Now, first of all, good luck to them because they're in Chicago. It is Big Show and Roman Reigns in Chicago. This could be, I would say, a disaster, but I think it'll be an entertaining disaster if the crowd turns on this match. Roman Reigns has been over in front of a lot of recent crowds at the SmackDown tapings and the house shows and all that. Maybe I am completely wrong in misreading this, and Roman Reigns comes out and gets a monster pop in Chicago. I don't see it happening. I don't see it happening. I think the fans will turn on this match. But do I think they'll go out there and have a great match? I do think they have the potential to have a very good match, because a lot of these last man standing matches in WWE, more often than not, I think, turn out to be pretty damn good. So even though I'm sick to death of seeing these two in the ring together, I'm not saying they're going to have a terrible match. And provided it's the last match I have to see the two of them in, I can live with it. Roman Reigns wins, he gets the big win, and they got to move him the hell into a different program when this is over. And not with Kane, either. I've read where he may be feuding with Kane next. That better be just rumor and not fact. I do not need to see Roman Reigns in the Big Show. I do not need to see Roman Reigns in Kane. I need to see Roman Reigns in anybody but those two. Put him in there with Bray Wyatt. Put him in there with Sheamus. I don't care. He has to move on to something else. It's killing him. It's not doing him any favors. But I do pick him as the winner here. And the main event, Seth Rollins defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship in a steel cage match where the RKO is banned. Defending the title against Randy Orton. And Kane, as we found out on Monday night, will be ringside as the Guardian of the Gate. I can't help but shake this feeling that we're going to get this inevitable Kane slash authority swerve to help Seth Rollins win. Maybe not. I mean, I nailed it on my Mizdow prediction with Summer Rae to a T. It went down exactly as I predicted it would, although I thought that one was kind of obvious. This one's a little less obvious, but I feel like it's going to be of the swerve variety here at the end, where Kane will help Rollins win. He'll do something that helps Rollins win. Now, maybe he helps Rollins win, but it's against his will. He wants badly to beat the shit out of this guy, but in the end, he does what's best for business. He helps the guy win, and it's not really a swerve. But I think the end result is the same, with Kane doing something that aids Rollins. Rollins gets the win and retains the WWE Championship. I do not see them switching the title here in this main event. So those are my picks for Extreme Rules. I have really low expectations for this show, but usually when I have low expectations for a show, it turns out to surprise me. And Extreme Rules in recent years has been a pretty good show, I think, overall. So I think we may be in for a good show even without the high expectations tonight. Monday Night Raw this past week was live from Albany, New York. Albany, New York, by the way, where they are having an NXT house show, I believe, on May 16th. I think is the date. I've had a lot of people ask me, am I going? The answer is no, I'm not going. I think people who don't live in New York, they may not have a concept of I said Pennsylvania earlier is a huge state. New York maybe isn't quite as big as Pennsylvania, but it's still a big state. And so where I am in New York, like in the New York City area, It's not exactly, a quick 30-minute drive to Albany. Albany is a ways away. I am not driving all the way to Albany just to go to an NXT house show. And I love NXT, but not that much. So, no, I am not going to the NXT show in Albany. But if you are, have fun. Because if it's anything like the show in San Jose, you're going to have a freaking blast. I'm going to wait until they bring NXT to the Manhattan Center, which I'm sure they will at some point. But Raw this past Monday night, I gave up a little more than halfway through the show. I have not done that in a long, long time. But I gave up on it. I saw Kane walk out for the John Cena Open Challenge. And I said, you know what? I've had enough. I've had my fill. 2 hours is enough for me. So I turned the show off. And I tried to watch Hulk Hogan's Rockin' Wrestling on the WWE Network. I've been waiting for them. This is the old cartoon from the 80s that they made. Hulk Hogan was the star. They had Piper and Junkyard Dog and Andre the Giant and Big John Studd, Iron Sheik. All these different people were in the cartoon. I used to watch it when I was a kid. And when I saw that it was being added to the network, I was excited to watch it because it's been so long. I mean, I haven't seen it on YouTube or anything. So then when I try to play the frickin' thing, I got a message saying that I am unable to watch it because it has not yet premiered and is not available yet on demand. But I did not let that deter me. Instead of flipping back to Raw, I was bound and determined to find something else. I just did not want to watch that show anymore. And so anything else that I could find on the network was going to be better than Raw. So I settled on the November 23rd, 1990 Thanksgiving episode of Saturday Night's Main Event, a show that featured the Ultimate Warrior, who was the WWF champion at that time, against the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. They had Sergeant Slaughter against Nikolai Volkoff, which sounds awful. And thankfully never got started. Slaughter beat his ass before the match, and Jim Duggan made the save. Big Boss Man against Mr. Perfect, which was awesome. This was also the show that had the infamous Playboy Buddy Rose blow-away diet skit, which was amazing for so many different reasons. Not all good. And the model, Rick Martel, who should be in the Hall of Fame, against Tito Santana. No Hulk Hogan, even though he was, you know, in the company at the time. He wasn't the champion, but he was there. No Hulk Hogan, not even a mention of Hogan the entire episode. Quick trivia note here. The infamous Hart Foundation versus Rockers match that never aired on TV where the Rockers won the tag team titles. Remember the rope broke in that match? That was taped at this show and it was supposed to air on TV, but never did. They claimed it was due to the rope break during the match. I don't know if that's the actual reason why they never aired it. That really wouldn't make any sense anyway, since the show was taped and they can just edit that part out. Even if they didn't edit the part out, there's got to be other reasons why they didn't air that match. I'm not exactly sure exactly what that reason would be, but you can watch the entire thing actually on one of the Shawn Michaels DVDs they put out. The match is out there. They did put it on the Michaels DVD. The Rockers, by the way, are not credited as being tag team champions, so this match would have fit perfectly on SmackDown since it's like it never happened. Warrior and DiBiase had what I would say is one of the better Warrior matches you'll ever see. Not on the level of the Randy Savage matches, but still pretty good. DiBiase, you know, DiBiase's an interesting one. I mean, the gimmick, the character, the promos, the guy was top-notch. When you watch DiBiase, he's not a flashy wrestler. Like, he's technically sound, but he's not as, let's say, technically gifted as somebody like Bret Hart or Shawn Michaels. And DiBiase also is not the kind that would be flying around the ring doing aerial stuff. He's kind of stuck in that middle somewhere. But when you really watch him, especially when he's in there with somebody like the Warrior, who's not as good, you really have to appreciate how freaking good Ted DiBiase was. Was he the best wrestler? No, he wasn't the best wrestler, but he was pretty damn good. So this match was a lot better than I thought it would be. Virgil interfered for the finish, and then Macho King came out with Sherry to attack the Warrior. He nailed him with the scepter off the top rope. This was a prolonged beatdown with a foreign object, and then 2 minutes later, Warrior staggered to his feet and posed with the title like nothing ever happened. Perfect and Boss Man. These two are just the best. I miss those guys so much. We all know how good Mr. Perfect was, but Big Boss Man's another one. He is so damn underrated as a worker. Just so underrated. His punches were great. You ever see a Big Boss Man punch? It's awesome. John Cena should lock himself in a room and watch nothing but Bret Hart and Big Boss Man matches so he can learn how to throw a believable frickin' punch. It's embarrassing. It is embarrassing to watch for a guy at his level to throw the kind of punches that he throws. But I guess we should talk about this show now that I've given you an impromptu Saturday Night's Main Event review from 25 years ago. The big news that everybody was freaking out about all day on Monday stemmed from a report on WrestleZone.com. They broke the story, Justin Labar, that WWE has, or would be, banning the curb stomp as a finish for Seth Rollins, most likely due to safety concerns. Not that Rollins has, to my knowledge, ever injured anybody with the move, although I do remember Brock Lesnar getting a lump on his head. He got a knot on his head once from taking the move. This reportedly came on the advice of WWE lawyers in light of all these frivolous lawsuits that guys are filing against them for head trauma. Oh, I wrestled 15 matches for the company and now I can't remember my name. Give me money! So it was suggested that maybe having your WWE champion on TV every week stomping people's heads into the mat might not look good in the court of public opinion. And sure enough, on this show, Rollins did not use the curb stomp. It was replaced with a far crappier maneuver. Honestly, I think it's a stupid overreaction. You know, I mean, where does it end? That's the problem that I have with this. Where does it end when you start, and we use the word banned. For all intents and purposes, the move is banned. That's not to say we won't ever see it again, but it's banned in terms of it will no longer be an every day, every week use. So if you're going to start banning moves, where does it end? Why not ban kicks to the head? Somehow, in the last few years, everybody in that company has incorporated these kicks to the head in their repertoire. Everybody does them now. Everybody in that company delivers kicks to the head. Bryan, Rusev, Harper, Rollins, everyone. I think those are far more dangerous if something goes wrong, no? See, the thing is, in pro wrestling, everything is dangerous. Everything is dangerous if something goes wrong, no matter what you do. If you hit the ropes wrong, you could injure yourself. One bad bump. Look at Perro Aguayo. Look at AJ Styles and the Styles Clash. Where does it end? You know, I don't know that they're doing it for safety so much as they're doing it to avoid bad PR. So I think this whole thing is dumb, but they'll claim it's for the safety of their performers. And look, you know, protecting the wrestlers is never a bad thing. So even though I think it's dumb and it potentially opens the door for other moves to be banned, I'm not as bothered by it as some other people. I mean, people are losing their shit over this. All I would say to that is just, you know, calm down. It's a wrestling move. It's one move. It's not that big of a deal. Frankly, I'm shocked they ever even let Seth Rollins use the name Curb Stomp for the move. They had him calling it Peace of Mind for a while, which was a terrible name, and then they started letting him call it by its actual name. But, you know, when I hear Curb Stomp, I, like many of you probably, think of American History X, or that one episode of The Sopranos where the guy says something he shouldn't have said to Tony's daughter, and his teeth end up vacationing on the floor outside of his mouth. That's what I think of. You know, you hear Curb Stomp, you don't think PG. Put it that way. You know, like I said on Twitter, and I don't mean to keep beating up on John Cena here, but I will anyway. I'm perfectly fine with them banning the Curb Stomp if it means I never have to see John Cena's shitty overselling of the move ever again. I mean, seriously, it's like Rollins has magnets in his boot that lift Cena up off the ground every time he goes to deliver the move. It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. Brock Lesnar always took the move like a champ. I mean, he sold it better than anybody else. I mean, RVD had a pretty good sell, too, but I would put Brock Lesnar at the top of the list as far as guys who just sold the shit out of that curb stomp. But, you know, I don't care. So long as he comes up with a finish that is worthy enough. You know, he's a main event level guy. He's the champ. He should have a cool looking finisher. If he comes up with one that's worthy enough to take its place, then I'm cool with it. You know, as long as it's not that garbage that he used at the end of the show. I did go back and see, and it was just, it looked terrible. But the story of the show was Stone Cold Randy Orton threatening to RKO everybody in existence until he got his hands on Seth Rollins, since he is not allowed to use the move on the pay-per-view. He was going to get it out of his system on the show. That was the story that this entire 3 hours was built around. We had Luke Harper and Dean Ambrose wrestling to a no contest in a 2-minute match. Bell never rang to signal the end of the match. We just had Michael Cole tell us that the match was over. And Harper threatened to powerbomb Ambrose off the stage to the floor. Ambrose wiggled out. Harper ended up throwing him off anyway. But, yeah, it's not like it was back in the 90s. He had a good 6 to 8 foot drop. He fell maybe 3 feet, landed on his feet, got right back up, tried to catch Harper, but Harper got away. Because we all know, you know, Luke Harper has super fast speed. New Day Sucks beat the Lucha Dragons by countout when Xavier Woods, who had crawled underneath the ring toward the finish, he popped his head out and was holding on to Sin Cara's feet, so he couldn't get back in the ring in time. Sin Cara looked good here, but the crowd came alive when Kalisto was in the ring. People are big time into Kalisto. I like what they're doing with the New Day right now. They know they suck. They know they have a shitty gimmick, and they're just now figuring out that the fans are ungrateful, and they need to cheat and do whatever it takes to win, because winning is everything. That's what the New Day has now discovered. Winning is everything. To a heel, that's how it should be. Fuck sportsmanship, to hell with giving it your all, and doing your best and all that crap. Win at all costs. As the great Al Bundy used to say, it's only cheating if you get caught. And in this case, Xavier Woods did not get caught. So they got a title shot now on the pay-per-view as a result. Bobby Heenan also had a great saying. He used to say, win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. He would have made a fantastic elected official in this country. After the match, Randy Orton appeared. He laid out Woods and Kofi, each with an RKO, proving that old habits die hard. Poor Kofi Kingston, he botched the initial RKO attempt by not jumping up for it, but on the second attempt, he jumped. Orton caught him coming down with a standing RKO. Thankfully, Orton kept his cool this time. Probably realized poor Kofi has suffered enough with this crappy gimmick, so why rub it in, you know? When Orton had his little bitch fit the first time when they feuded 6 years ago, that was the end of Kofi's push. That was the beginning of the end for Kofi Kingston when he botched that move and Randy Orton, you know, went all diva and prima donna on him. Who knows how far he would have gone had that not happened. Somewhere in here, they recapped Big Show chokeslamming Roman Reigns on top of the English taxicab the week before, and JBL, like a dumb shit, just goes, I've never seen anything like what happened to Roman Reigns, Maggle. I've never seen anything like what happened to Roman Reigns. That's what he said. This from a man who himself was chokeslammed on the roof of a car once by The Undertaker on a pay-per-view. See, it's like, I understand if they don't want him to say that, although I don't know why you wouldn't. You know, going back and bringing up old history is not a bad thing. But if they don't want him to say that, fine. Why the fuck would you have him say anything then? It's just, of the three announcers, you have JBL as the guy to make a comment like that. Either of the other two guys could have said that, but JBL is the one they had say that. It's so insulting. I know it shouldn't be that big of a deal. It's just so insulting to me as a fan, as a viewer. When I watch this show, I want to at least pretend like things matter. And every time they do shit like that, it slaps me in the face and says, none of this shit matters. So why should I care? Why should I be invested in any of this stuff? Why should I feel bad that I turned the show off 2 hours in? I shouldn't feel bad at all. I don't know. As a fan, maybe I'm alone in this. I find stuff like that just unbelievably insulting. Triple H came out to announce that Tough Enough is back on June 23rd on USA Network, and that we, the WWE Universe, can send in our videos right now to audition as the next WWE superstar. So you listening to this podcast right now, if you're tough enough, if you send in a video, you could be on the show. You could be headlining WrestleMania 5 years from now. Triple H said, who wouldn't want to walk down the aisle at WrestleMania to their own entrance music and do what they do? I mean, after all, we all have shitty, menial jobs anyway, making no money, so who wouldn't want to win a contract to spend the next 3 years in developmental, making little money for the chance to possibly make it to the main roster and go on the road for 250 days a year, saddled with some shitty gimmick thought up by a 69-year-old mental patient with the sense of humor of a 5-year-old? Who changes his mind all the time and thinks all millennials lack ambition to grab an imaginary brass ring that exists only in his own mind. Because like I said, he's a mental patient who hallucinates and sees brass rings floating in the air every day. I mean, who wouldn't want that shit? Sign me up! He said 10 men and 5 women would be named finalists, with 1 male and 1 female being chosen as winners. So that's the same formula they used for the original Tough Enough back in the MTV days. That very first season, remember, they had 1 man and 1 female. They had Maven and Nydia as the winners. I think the second season, I think they had 2 female winners. I think it was Linda Miles and Jackie Gaeta, if I remember correctly. So anyway, that's the formula they're using here. This was not a good promo, and the crowd did not react to it one bit. It was just a bad idea to have him out there doing this. And I'll tell you another reason why this thing fell so flat. Because I don't believe for a second that Triple H likes the idea of Tough Enough at all. In fact, I'm willing to bet that he hated being out there even talking about it. He probably hated it more than I did. Yeah, I remember the stories when Tough Enough first debuted on MTV and how much Triple H resented it. Yeah, he was an old school guy. He didn't appreciate the curtain being pulled back so much on the wrestling business and how much it exposed things. Now, since then, the curtain's been ripped right the hell off. And maybe that's part of the problem, is that people know too much. But I don't believe for a second that he's warmed up to the idea of Tough Enough. I think he probably still hates the concept. So he went out there, he did this half-hearted promo, which was more of an advertisement to go to the website. But he didn't care. And it showed. It showed in his work. This was a bad promo. However, things picked up when Kane came out. There's something I bet you thought you'd never hear me say. Triple H joked that Kane was a little too seasoned to be part of Tough Enough. I did think that was funny. Kane gave his 2 weeks notice as the director of operations. Triple H tried to talk him out of it when Seth Rollins came out. He said Triple H should just let Kane quit. And that's when Kane lost his shit and started screaming at Rollins that if it wasn't for Kane helping him win the Money in the Bank briefcase, he wouldn't even be WWE champion right now. He said they could have just as easily picked Dean Ambrose for the spot. Hell, they could have picked El Torito. They could have put the title on El Torito, he said. Which is an idea the crowd supported, by the way. El Torito would probably make a hell of a champion, but you'd never know how good he really is because he's a mascot in a frickin' bull costume. That's their bright idea for how to use that guy. One of the best promos I've ever heard Kane cut. Kane showed a ton of fire here, pun intended, and just cut a hell of a promo. Triple H then calmed everybody down, said that at Extreme Rules, he was making Kane the guardian of the gate, so that anybody who wants to get in or out would have to first go through Kane. If they're just going to openly admit that people are going to interfere in this match, then why the hell did Randy Orton even bother making this a cage match? What the hell is the point of even having cage matches in WWE if in advance you are willfully admitting that you have to put somebody at the door to make sure that people will not interfere? Because without him, people will get inside the cage. Why even have a cage? Why not just call Kane what he is? He is an interference monitor. That is his official title. That's what he is. So Kane approved of this. He shook Triple H's hand. Then Rollins grudgingly shook Kane's hand, and he stormed off. Naomi beat Brie Bella with her ass in 9 minutes. I dozed off at the start of this match, so I didn't do the stopwatch this week. But thankfully, you guys covered for me. I guess the Bellas are back to being babyfaces again. Like I said earlier when I did the Extreme Rules predictions, they are babyfaces. Somewhere in here, Booker T said that he thinks Naomi may be the greatest diva of all time. I don't want to live on this planet anymore. These announcers, just, if credibility was a form of currency, these guys would be homeless on the street begging for change. Shout out, by the way, to Joey Numbers of Wrestling Soup. He was at a dive bar during Raw on Monday night. And by the way, being at a bar during Raw, probably the way to go. And when the Divas match came on, he said the bartender mentioned the Diva stopwatch. And that's when he realized that he was a huge Sound Off fan, and apparently he played a clip for Joey of a question that he had sent into the show that I answered a while back, and they became fast friends for the next 20 minutes. So you see, this podcast brings people together, be it inebriated or sober. Either way, they're everywhere, fans of this podcast. It's awesome. Where are the bartenders who are Sound Off fans when I'm out drinking? That's what I want to know. How come I never find these people? Backstage, in catering, Heath Slater was telling Eric Rowan, who was wearing a mask while sitting in catering, I just thought I would point that out, Slater was telling him that he was going to beat John Cena in the Open Challenge tonight, when out of nowhere, Randy Orton put him through a table with an RKO. Roman Reigns came to the ring for a promo. He said he didn't want to talk. He wanted to fight. Finally, they're figuring it out. It took them a while, but I think they're finally getting the hang of how to book this guy. So instead of Big Show, he got Bo Dallas instead. I completely forgot about Bo Dallas. I know he was out with an injury. This was his first time back on Raw. I know he came out when Sting came out for that network exclusive the night after WrestleMania. Sting laid him out with the death drop. But this was his first time back on Raw, the TV show, in months. And I completely forgot about him. And I saw him and how he's being used. And it just made me, it made me sad. I mean, he had a comedy gimmick, but he was so entertaining in NXT. Especially, I remember that one episode where they had to literally drag him kicking and screaming out of Full Sail. And he broke free from security and they chased him down. You know, he's funny. Like, he had that character down pat. And my fear was, okay, they're going to bring him to the main roster and he's going to be a joke and he's just going to fall to the wayside. And that's exactly what's happened here. That is exactly what's happened. You know, I would almost be in favor of just, if they're not going to do anything meaningful with this guy in a funny way, you know, they already brought him back on TV. They should have kept him off TV and brought him back as like a follower of his brother. Acknowledge the fact that they are related and bring him back as a follower of Bray Wyatt. Just go all the way with it. I was never a fan of that idea before, but you know what? If they've got nothing better for this guy, he should contribute in some way. If you don't feel he has any value, then just fucking cut him and get rid of him. But I would be in favor of doing that with him at this point. It's better than what they're doing. Bo Dallas, he comes out. He referred to Roman Reigns as Outback Jack and Kevlar, which is my new name for Roman Reigns. He also compared him to Tim Tebow and said that Star Wars Episode 1 was the best of all the Star Wars movies. It may well be. I've never seen any of them, so I wouldn't know. I saw Spaceballs as a kid. And then when I heard about this Star Wars thing, I thought they had ripped off Spaceballs. So anyway, you're kind of a bust, is what he finally said to Roman Reigns. And Reigns gave him a Superman punch and a spear, and then said that he would be the last man standing on Sunday, and you can believe that. They announced Chris Jericho is going to interview Stephanie McMahon this Thursday night on the WWE Network after SmackDown. If it happened on SmackDown, it didn't happen does not apply here since it's after SmackDown. If it happens after SmackDown, we're good. If it happens on SmackDown, then it didn't happen. Just to clarify that. John Cena came out for his open challenge, which was accepted by Kane. And like I said earlier, this is the point in the show that I threw in the towel. I just could not sit through another John Cena versus Kane match. So this is where I switched over to the network to try to watch cartoons, and I ended up watching Saturday Night's Main Event instead. I did read the results for the rest of the show because I knew I was going to do this review. I have to know what happened. And I wanted to know what new finish Rollins was going to use. So I read the results and then I went back and the only thing I actually watched was the finish to the Rollins-Ziggler match. I didn't actually watch anything else. But I read the results and by the way, just on Rollins' finisher, it's basically Dirty Deeds. Only he plants the guy face down instead of head first. It looked terrible. It's a shitty move. And hopefully it's just a placeholder until he comes up with something better. Cena beat Kane, of course, in their match. Miz and Mizdow for the rights to the Miz brand. As I predicted last week, Summer Rae turned on Mizdow, helped Miz win with the skull-crushing finale. So Miz is off to make a movie and still had to win the feud. And get the girl. He was then promptly flattened with an RKO out of nowhere after the match. Bray Wyatt did a promo talking about how you can lift all the weight in the world and it won't help you, so it looks like the guy he's talking about may not be Roman Reigns, as I predicted. It may be Ryback. Ryback was out next. He made short work of Adam Rose. And then in the main event, Seth Rollins pinned Dolph Ziggler off a distraction by Sheamus with his shitty non-curb stomp finish to get the win. After the match, Triple H came down. He cut a promo. Apparently, Seth cut him off in mid-promo, and I read that Triple H did not look pleased. So they may be planting the seeds of a Brock Lesnar return from his suspension down the road if Rollins keeps this up. The Authority may end up reinstating the Beast just to put Rollins in his place at SummerSlam. That's what I predict. Kane started to come down to go back after Rollins when Rollins called for the cage that was hanging above the ring to be lowered. And they did lower it, but he ended up being trapped inside with Randy Orton, who gave him an RKO to end the show. It was by no means the worst Raw of the year, so I can't tell you exactly what it was, but for the first time in a long time, I just turned the show off because I just couldn't take it anymore. I just could not take it anymore. It was getting late. You get into that third hour, and it's like, they better put something on here that keeps my attention. And just the sight of Kane coming out to accept that open challenge against Cena was just, that was it. And you know what? I really didn't miss it. I didn't miss it at all. I didn't go back. I didn't rush back the next day to watch it on the DVR, even though it's still sitting there on the DVR. I had no interest. I had no interest in going back and watching it. I was perfectly content watching my 1990 Saturday Night's Main Event on the network. You know, I think it's just more of a case the show is just too damn long. And when there's not a whole lot going on, and we're in this kind of dead period right now, post-WrestleMania, that happens every single year, there's not a whole lot going on, those 3 hours feel like an eternity when there's really nothing going on. When there's stuff going on and it's entertaining, it passes a lot quicker, but those shows were few and far between. Most weeks, they're just trying to fill time, and you can't keep people's interest for 3 hours if your goal is just to fill time. You know, why do you think most weeks that third hour rating is lower than all the rest? Same thing this past week. You know, that third hour was the lowest rated hour of the bunch. Why do you think that is? That is not a coincidence. Why do you think that the crowd most weeks in the building is dead as a doornail in that third hour? Because they're burned out. That's what happened to me here. I got burned out. And when I saw John Cena vs. Kane on my TV screen, I had seen enough.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
According to a report on PW Insider this past week, Samoa Joe was backstage at this week's NXT tapings to meet with Triple H about a possible deal with the company, which would seem to indicate that there is no deal currently, which would explain why he has started taking indie bookings in late May. Originally, he was only booked on the indies through the end of this month, and now he's got bookings into the end of next month. So it may not be as much of a foregone conclusion as we thought, but I still think he's coming in soon. I think there's clearly interest from both sides. They're talking, they're meeting, they'll make the deal happen. Crowd was dead for this week's NXT. I don't even think it was the last show of the taping, so I don't know what happened here. But it's like a bunch of corpses sitting in the crowd for most of the show. Finn Balor beat Ty Dillinger to open the show. Basic match, just an exhibition for Balor, who won with the coup de grace, which the announcers continue to annoyingly refer to as the coup de grace. Say it with me. Coup de grace. Coup de grace. See, it's not hard. Afterwards, Tyler Breeze cut a promo using his phone and challenged Finn Balor, so that's his next feud, which is awesome. I can't wait to see that. Devin Taylor interviewed Dana Brooke. Bland, robotic promo. Her promos are about at the level of her wrestling skills at this point. It is developmental, and she is still developing, but they did decide to put her on TV, so it's perfectly fine to criticize her. She's got a long ways to go. Becky Lynch beat Charlotte and Bayley in a triple threat number one contenders match to earn a shot at Sasha Banks' women's championship. Really fun match. Charlotte had the figure eight leg lock on Bayley, whose shoulders were flat on the mat. Becky made the slow crawl onto Bayley, and she stole the pin. Now, of course, you could argue that Charlotte should also be the winner because she was the one who had Bayley in the hold, and when your shoulders are down in a figure four, the referee usually counts you down. But they wanted to come up with a clever finish, and so, whatever. I didn't have a problem with it. It's a really good match. The long goodbye continues as CJ Parker lost to Hideo Itami. Basic match, not much to it. Rhino gored the shit out of somebody in a squash. And in the main event, Kevin Owens, for the second straight time, beat Alex Riley clean in the middle with his pop-up powerbomb. And I wrote here in my notes, two guys with shitty tattoos fighting each other. And poor Alex Riley, all that rage, and look where it's gotten him. All that rage that was built up in this poor bastard. After the match, Owens threatened to give Riley an apron powerbomb when Sami Zayn ran down to attack Owens. They brawled all over the place until referees pulled him apart. They had Owens outside the ring, kind of outside, like in one of the corners, when Sami Zayn broke free. He climbed to the top rope and did a cannonball dive out to the floor, wiping out Owens and a whole cluster of officials that were congregated out there by the front row. Wiped them all out. It's a great spot to end the show with. Really, it stole the show, I think, with the women not too far behind. Those are the highlights of the show. But the rest was pretty much just filler. Not really all that exciting an episode this week. Next live special will be May 20th. That is the next TakeOver special with Sami Zayn against Kevin Owens in the main event for the championship. I did not read any of the other spoilers, but I think kind of looking at the lay of the land here and the different programs and where they're going, I can sort of piece together the rest of the card, you know, in my head, what it might be without actually knowing. Probably Balor against Breeze, Becky and Sasha for the women's title, unless they blow it off, you know, next week on the show. Probably Kaz and Enzo getting a tag title shot against Blake and Murphy. They're keeping Rhino around as well, and so maybe they put him in there with somebody like Baron Corbin. I say Baron Corbin because at the San Jose show that I was at last month, they did Rhino against Corbin, with Corbin as the heel going over. So I could see that being maybe like a dry run for an eventual TV program where they use Rhino to get the young guy over. I mean, neither of them are really doing anything right now anyway, so it would make sense. But again, I have no idea. I'm just speculating. And we will know soon enough. But mark it down. Don't just mark down March, or May 20th, rather, for the special. Don't forget Cinco de Mayo, May 5th. It's coming up, that E60 special on ESPN. It's an entire hour devoted to NXT, what it's all about. I think a lot of the footage was filmed about a year ago, because from the trailer that you can find on YouTube, if you type in E60 NXT, it'll come right up. A lot of it is focused on Corey Graves, who of course now is retired, but a lot of it focuses on him, and so even if the footage is a little dated, I am very much looking forward to that. So don't forget to mark that down on your calendar for May 5th. Thank you guys for taking time out of your day to listen to The Sound Off. I get questions from people asking, how can I support the podcast? Well, the best way to support the show is simple. Just keep listening each and every week. Keep spreading the word about it to friends and family and retweet or share links to the episodes on Twitter and Facebook. But beyond that, you can contribute by making a PayPal donation or by signing up for a free 30-day trial of the Audible.com service. Making a PayPal donation is simple. Just log on to thesolemonster.com and you'll see the PayPal donation box on the right-hand side of the page. Enter whatever amount you'd like and click the Make a Donation button. That's it. Or sign up for a free Audible trial by entering our custom URL, audibletrial.com/solemonster. From there, you can sign up free for 30 days, which helps us out. You get one free audiobook as part of your trial that you get to keep no matter what. You can browse through their library of over 150,000 titles. Listen to your books at home, on the commute to work, at the gym, whenever, wherever. Sign up at audibletrial.com/solemonster or visit thesolemonster.com to make a donation right now. And thank you for supporting The Sound Off. I didn't have a chance to watch Impact this week. You know, coming back from Pennsylvania and everything else, I was kind of out of sorts. I just didn't have time. I hope to watch it at some point. I was kind of interested to see how this all-women show goes, and I know they had a championship match in the main event, so my goal is to watch it, even if I don't review it, but can't talk about it since I haven't seen it. But we could talk about Lucha Underground. And show started after recapping all of the different storylines, including Drago winning the Best of Five series with Aerostar to earn a shot at Prince Puma's title, which will take place this upcoming Wednesday, will be that championship match. Of course, the stipulation is that if Drago fails to win, he is gone from Lucha Underground. So they recapped that. They recapped all the trios tournament stuff and Sexy Star saving ring announcer Melissa Santos from a broken arm last week at the hands of Pentagon Jr. We got a vignette to open the show after all that with Black Lotus, Angela Fong, who we have not seen in several weeks. She says she's been training for the last 8 weeks. And then we see her kicking the ass of a bunch of dudes who are silhouetted, so we can't tell who they are. Apparently it's a test from Dragon Azteca, the luchador who you may recall kidnapped her in his car trunk. She then gets to fight him. She falls short of breaking his arm. She has the chance. She has him in a compromising position. She could break his arm off. She doesn't do it. And that seems to disappoint Azteca, and he deems that you are not ready. WWE should send Eva Marie to this guy. Forget Brian Kendrick. Sexy Star against Pentagon Jr. was the first match on the show. Melissa Santos has a wrap on her ankle for added effect after last week's attack by Pentagon. This was a straight-up, back-and-forth, man-versus-woman match. You know my thoughts on this. I'm not a big fan of it, but they did a good job with it. They did a good job with what they had to do here. I thought this turned into a good match. And Sexy Star pinned Pentagon Jr. after a backcracker into a pinfall. Now, the move looked great. So, in a way, I almost don't mind it too much, because it actually did look like a pretty devastating finish. But, you know, I would not have had Pentagon lose to a woman. I'm sorry. You know, I know they're trying very hard to build up Sexy Star as being on the same level with the men. She's not. She's just not. You know, physically, she's not. And there's this believability gap here that even though it's pro wrestling and I have to suspend my disbelief, it's just difficult when they do this sort of thing. I don't think it hurts Pentagon too much. It's not like, you know, people are suddenly not going to react to him. He lost all of his heat. But you know what? This is a guy that they have been building up as this devastating monster for months now. He comes out. There's this feeling of dread when he comes out because you just know he's going to end up breaking somebody's arm. And they put him in a match, and I can't remember the last time Pentagon lost a singles match. So I can't say he's undefeated because I'm sure he must have lost maybe in those first few weeks of the season, but I can't remember the last time he lost a singles match. He may as well be undefeated. And his first loss is to Sexy Star. I would not have done that. I was not a fan of that at all. It turned into a good match. The finish was good, but yeah, this was a big step back, I think, and not the way that Pentagon Jr. should be booked. We see Johnny Mundo training in a backstage vignette when in walks Alberto El Patron. He mocks Mundo for losing last week. Mundo tries to act tough, which unfortunately requires him to act, and that's never a good thing with Mundo. But they are clearly building to a match between the two of them. Who knows when, given that Alberto is still recovering from a partially torn quad muscle. Just like that, it's main event time. It's an hour-long show. See, that's why these hour-long shows are just the frickin' best, man. They don't have any time to waste. So they cover all the possible angles. They cover all their key storylines. They have great vignettes. They have a couple of matches. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It leaves you wanting more for the week after. That's how I like my wrestling show. So it's right into the main event, which clearly they were going to give a lot of time to, because there was a lot of time left in the show. It's the finals of the Trios Tag Team Tournament with Cage, Tejano, and King Cuerno against Son of Havoc, Ivelisse, and Angelico against Big Rick Killshot and The Mac. I've talked about how impressive Cage is for a guy his size. He's way more agile and way more athletic than you may think just by looking at him. But he is still a big jacked up dude, and he is strong. There was a spot here where he delivered a double standing suplex. Not just a double suplex, okay? A double standing vertical suplex to two men, Angelico and Killshot. Now granted, Angelico and Killshot together probably weigh a maximum combined weight of 300 pounds, if that. But still, very impressive stuff. And then later on, Cage climbs to the top rope and he does a moonsault out onto everybody on the floor. How did TNA let this guy go after gut check? That's what I want to know. They had Cage. Cage wrestled on Impact a few times. He was brought in with the whole gut check thing. And before long, he was gone. So unless it was his decision, and I don't think it was, if you're TNA, you have a guy like that that looks the way he does and is as athletic as he is, how do you let somebody like that go? How does WWE not take interest in a guy like this? You know, I could say the same thing about WWE letting the Mac go before he ever set foot in the Performance Center in Florida. You know, they got him. They either signed him or were about to sign him and was running him through medicals. And, I mean, who knows what came up, I guess, on medicals. But how do you let a guy like that go? I mean, he looks like Sir Mo from Men on a Mission, but he flies around in there like Adrian Neville. That's the best way I can describe Willie Mack. He's amazing. Angelico dives off the apron at one point with a knee, nails Tejano. Tejano falls backwards into Daivari. Daivari, who was sitting in the front row last week, was there again, sitting in the front row with a drink in hand. Unfortunately, that drink spilled all over him. He's none too happy about it, and so he attacks Tejano, and he starts beating the crap out of him. Matt Stryker calls for security. He's trying to play it off like a fan has gone crazy. Never acknowledged who he was. He only goes so far as to say he looks familiar. So yeah, I thought that was goofy, especially when he referred to him as a Shah. At one point, Matt Stryker, he actually referred to him as a Shah. Why is a dude got to be a Shah? Just because he's brown? Come on now. Daivari tells the fans to move. He hurls Tejano into the first four rows, knocking over all the wooden chairs. And just like that, he left. Killshot nails a double foot stomp on Tejano back in the ring for the pin, meaning Tejano, Cage, and King Cuerno are eliminated. And we are down to two teams. Now, if this was The Walking Dead, the black dudes almost certainly would have been the first ones eliminated. But they're still alive. They advanced. Somewhere in here, Ivelisse did a dive out onto the floor, started selling her knee. Remember that, because I'm going to bring it up again at the end of this match. By the way, Willie Mack, I have to say this, Willie Mack does a better diving elbow off the top rope than CM Punk ever did. It had to be said, I'm sorry. Max is actually more like Shawn Michaels' elbow, the way he does it, not really Randy Savage so much. But if Savage ever saw Punk's elbow, he'd hang himself with his own Slim Jim. It was such an impressive elbow that Willie Mack delivered here. Vampiro actually hugged Matt Stryker. He was moved. He was so moved by this elbow that he had to embrace another man. And Matt Stryker happened to be the guy that was sitting next to him, so he hugged him. That's how happy he was. Fast forward a bit. Angelico gets Killshot up for his Fall of the Angels finish, which is a running razor's edge into the corner, and he gets the pin and seemingly the win for his team. I say seemingly for a reason. By the way, Angelico uses the buckle bomb as a finish. Now that I think about it, why can't Seth Rollins do the same thing? He also uses the power bomb into the turnbuckles. He should use that as his new finish. It's a hell of a lot better than whatever he used last Monday. That's for sure. That'd be my vote. Let him use that as a finish. Dario Cueto walks out of his office as soon as the match ends. He looks stunned that Angelico, Ivelisse, and Son of Havoc won, especially when the whole reason he paired the three of them off in the first place was because he knew they all hated each other. So he congratulates them on their win, says they have one more team to beat, and that will be the Crew, Cortez Castro, Mr. Cisco, and Bale. And it will be a no disqualification match. I'll skip over all the stuff where they beat the hell out of Ivelisse and choked her out with a kendo stick. And instead, I will talk about Cisco's horribly botched suplex to Son of Havoc off one of the short balconies. So if you've never watched the show before, first of all, what's wrong with you? Second of all, you gotta picture this environment here at ringside. So when they're on either side of the ring on the outside, okay, there's no fans like right there in the front row. There's like a little bit of a wall, maybe like a 3 or 4 foot wall, and then you see the fans, okay? So he had Son of Havoc kind of dangling over that barricade 3 or 4 feet up. They're both standing on the edge 3 or 4 feet up. And he goes to suplex him, I guess, out onto the floor, 3 or 4 feet down. Well, when Cisco starts to fall backwards for the move, for whatever reason, he reaches out with his free hand. He grabs the guardrail. And that just ruined the whole flow and momentum of the move. And so what ended up happening is Son of Havoc, he almost falls like straight down. His head just gets spiked right into the wall, right into the barrier. It looked brutal. And Angelico and Cortez are fighting up the staircase, up into the crowd. And somewhere in here, Angelico is left for dead on one of the upper balconies. Now, we've seen that used before, even if you think back to Grave Consequences, the match with Mil Muertes and Phoenix. There was a point in the match where they brawled up the staircase into the crowd and onto a balcony. And Mil Muertes was threatening to throw or powerbomb Phoenix off the balcony, which thankfully never happened. They have a balcony up there like that on either side. Johnny Mundo once did a dive from the balcony to the ring. So Angelico is laid out on top of this little platform, this balcony they have up there. He's way up there, and he's laid out. He's out of the equation. Son of Havoc ends up getting a measure of revenge on Cisco back down at ringside when he climbs back up onto the guardrail of that small balcony right in front of the fans, and he does a standing moonsault onto Cisco, using the head, by the way, of a fan in the front row to steady himself before he He executes the move. Fan didn't seem to mind. Back in the ring, Ivelisse is hurt, still selling her knee. She's all alone with Castro and Bale. They're quickly approaching. Things are looking very bleak for poor Ivelisse. Son of Havoc is still outside the ring recovering. We get a shot of Angelico up in the balcony, just sitting there, looking helpless, like there's no way he can make it down in time to save Ivelisse. He's so far up there. Or can he? That's when we saw one of the most amazing things I've ever seen on a wrestling show, when Angelico does a running dive off the balcony. You gotta, to really appreciate this, you have to watch it, number one. But just watch the way, like, he dives off the balcony. All it takes is one slip of his foot. And this kind of goes to what I was talking about earlier when we were talking about the curb stomp stuff with Seth Rollins and what moves are dangerous and what moves aren't. There's no such thing as a non-dangerous move in wrestling, because any move, any movement in the ring, into the ropes, whatever, if it's mistimed, if it's fucked up in some way, can result in catastrophic injury. So think of how high up this guy was doing that dive. If his foot that he planted right on the edge had slipped, it would have been catastrophic. This guy did a running dive off the balcony, flying through the air and crashing down onto Castro and Bale in the middle of the ring. Bale in particular took the brunt of it. He looked like he got knocked the fuck out. And all three men are down. They're all laid out. Fucking believable to watch this move. Just unreal. This was unreal. I'm going to play the audio for you. I ripped some of the audio from this spot. Listen to the crowd. Listen to the crowd. Listen to Stryker on commentary after the pause when he gets back on commentary. This was just so well done. Just listen to this.
Ivelisse alone in the ring. Angelico too far to do a thing. Son of Havoc out on the outside. It was fun while it lasted. That was dope! They may not like each other.
I didn't even tell you the best part. After Angelico comes diving off the frickin' roof and they pull back for a wide shot as he's flying through the air and he wipes everybody out, you see Vampiro throw down his headset, throw his arms in the air, and just start running back and forth. It was hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. He's so great in this role. Both of them are. I said last week, they are my favorite announce team right now in all of wrestling. I hope they never break up. So after all the carnage, Ivelisse gains possession of the kendo stick. She beats the hell out of Castro and Bale with it. Son of Havoc scales the top rope on one side. Angelico climbs to the top rope on the opposite side. And in stereo, Havoc comes off with a shooting star press. Angelico nails the double foot stomp for the pin. And your first ever Lucha Underground Trios Tag Team Champions, Angelico, Ivelisse, and Son of Havoc. Havoc and Angelico get caught up in the moment. They hug briefly before realizing, hey, we hate each other. I thought that was funny. Ivelisse, who had injured her knee earlier in the first match, is selling the injury after the match here, hobbling on one leg and limping around. That's something you don't see enough of these days, especially with the women. So I thought that was cool. That's why I wanted to point that out. Loud chants of that was awesome and you deserve it to cap off an excellent show that was all about those two main event matches in the Trios tournament. They've been building this tournament up for weeks, and so it was all about the Trios tag team titles. They made it seem like a very big deal, a very important deal. If you are a wrestling fan, okay, not just a WWE fan, I'm not a wrestling fan, I'm a WWE fan, absolutely. Okay, no, if you are a wrestling fan, if you are a fan of great professional wrestling, watch this show. It is better to know the backstories for all the characters going into this, but it will not diminish your enjoyment of it if you are not familiar with everybody involved. If you just want to go and watch this episode, it's not like it will, it will just kill the vibe or anything like that. I think you'll still enjoy it and have fun. But I love this. Just a fun show. A fun hour of wrestling. That's all I can say. Mailbag. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. We're going to do kind of a mini mailbag this week, and we'll hopefully be able to do more questions in the weeks to come. I'm so backlogged. There's tons of questions, but we'll just do a few here. Again, please include your name and where you are from when you do send me an email. John from Phoenix, Arizona. I remember reading a few days after the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in 2012 with Brock Lesnar and John Cena that Brock was really upset at the promo that Cena cut after their match. Have you heard about this? Yeah, well, what happened is, you know, Brock Lesnar beat the shit out of John Cena in that match. John Cena won in the end. One of the all-time dumb decisions that company has ever made. And so Cena, after bleeding, he got cut open, he was bleeding, just beaten down his arm. He was selling his arm and his shoulder like he had some kind of injury. It was ripped out of the socket or something. Instead of, you know, kind of leaving, maybe having a referee under each arm, I mean, you're not going to stretch your John Cena out of there. Instead of doing that and really selling the enormity of the beating that he sustained in this match, he took a seat in the ring on top of the ring steps and he cut a promo. He cut a promo after the match. He was cracking jokes. He said, hey, everybody, drive home safe. Get home safe. Like, so the belief is that this just infuriated Brock Lesnar backstage. He pitched a fit. He was pissed off. He felt that it was insulting. They weren't, you know, he wasn't selling the injuries. I still don't know whose idea that was. I don't know if that was just John Cena's idea, if they told him to do that. But that's what that was all about. And I mean, Brock got over it. It wasn't like he walked out on the company after that. But Brock was just fuming mad when he heard John Cena on the mic and cutting that kind of promo, no less. It was like, I just beat the shit out of you. I busted you open. I beat you with a chain. I almost broke your arm. And now you're sitting there telling the people, hey, drive home safe. Like, it didn't make sense. Even though it was off air. Actually, no, it wasn't off air, was it? That aired. I believe that aired on the pay-per-view, if I remember correctly. It did. That makes it even worse. See, even if it was a dark promo, it would still be pretty bad. But maybe that's why Brock was so angry, because that was still airing on TV. And you've got this guy who's just been beaten and bloodied telling the people in the building, first of all, he said, hey, I might be going away for a while, which everybody thought, okay, that means he's hurt. And meanwhile, I don't think he missed a week of TV. He had his arm like in a sling for a few weeks and that was it. But I mean, sitting there and telling the people, hey, drive home safe, everybody, you know, thumbs up. Yeah, that was not a promo that should have aired at the end of that pay-per-view. Cody from South Carolina. I wanted to ask you about Undertaker's American Badass run. I am a big fan of shows like OSW Review and the Attitude Era podcast, and they are highly critical of Undertaker's American Badass run. What is your opinion of the Undertaker during that time? Did the character work for that time? Could he have worked as the Dead Man when he returned from injury in 2000? Of course, absolutely. I was expecting him to come back as the Dead Man. I was expecting him to come back as the Dead Man with Paul Bearer, and I think that had been the plan. Undertaker... just to give a little bit of backstory here, Undertaker left in September of 99. He had a lot of issues. He had some kind of surgery. It might have been with his hip or his... it might have been hip-related. I'm not really sure. But he went away. He had surgery. He went away for several months. He was training to come back in January of 2000. And I remember reading that as he was training to come back from that injury, whatever it was, he tore his pec in training. And so that delayed his comeback for another 3 or 4 months. He ended up missing WrestleMania. One of the few WrestleManias The Undertaker ever missed was 16, because he got hurt when he was about to come back. So instead, what they did, and I think it was the first Raw in February, it was that famous Raw, one of my favorite episodes in Dallas. It was that big 10-man tag. It was Rock, Cactus Jack, Rikishi, and Too Cool against Triple H and the Radicals. When that match was over, the lights went out, they came back on, and there was Paul Bearer in a red jacket looking slim for Paul Bearer. Pyro goes off. Everyone was thinking at first, I included, okay, here it is, Undertaker's coming back, but then they hit Kane's music, and it was Kane's big return. I say Kane's big return kind of jokingly because they built it up like it was some big comeback. Kane had been off TV for like 2 weeks. You know, maybe he was in the Royal Rumble and hadn't been seen since the Rumble. It was like 2 weeks. It was ridiculous. But that's why Kane came back with Paul Bearer, not The Undertaker. Undertaker came back a few months later as the American Badass. So somewhere in there is where the decision was made by whoever that he was going to come back with a completely different look. I didn't like it. I was not a fan of the American Badass at all. It just was not the Undertaker that I liked and that I knew. But I can tell you, looking back on it all these years later, I appreciate the gimmick now in a way that I didn't before. Especially when he went from American Badass to Big Evil in 2003. He was still a heel, but the Big Evil run and those promos that he would cut, I'm the big dog that runs this yard, he really did come off like a badass. I look back on it now, and maybe this is why. There's no real men in wrestling anymore, except for guys like Brock Lesnar. I look at the WWE, active WWE roster right now, and Brock is not around. There is not a single guy that I look at, and I say to him, like a headlining guy at least, that I look at and I say, that's a real man right there. Undertaker had that vibe like, this is a real man. This is a guy that will walk up and will kick your ass. And I don't get that vibe with hardly anybody right now on the active roster. So maybe that's why I look back on it and I kind of long for those days. Maybe I just long for the days where everybody wasn't such a freaking pussy. Undertaker was not a pussy. You know, American Badass, Big Evil. I look back on that now. I think it was pretty cool. And I was kind of disappointed that he didn't come back with the motorcycle against Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania. I had heard the rumors, and I was expecting maybe an American Badass return at WrestleMania this year, and I wouldn't have minded that. But they didn't do it. So, you know, maybe other people crap all over it. I probably did at that time, but I look back on it now, and I actually think it was a pretty cool gimmick, and it would work. Hey, you know, it would work today. If they wanted to dust it off and do it again today, I think it would actually work better now because, I mean, God, Undertaker would stick out like a sore thumb compared to some of the other guys they have on this roster. David Menigo, the pride of Silver Spring, Maryland, one of our longtime listeners. Ever think that maybe Zack Ryder's tweets are just based on his character? Maybe WWE officials are instructing him to put out these tweets for entertainment value? I mean, why else would he still be employed? Do you think Zack's tweets are all an act? Or is Zack Ryder really screaming for help using dark, humorous tweets? I don't believe for a second the company tells him to put that stuff out. I just think he's screaming for attention. He's not on TV, or he's rarely on TV. They're not doing anything with him. He's one step away from being cut. I almost would have more respect for the guy if he would have gone to the company months ago or even a couple of years ago and said, look, I'm out of here. Peace out. I think I might have more respect for the guy had he walked out on his own like Justin Gabriel and a lot of these other guys that are starting to realize there is money to be made on the independent scene. It's not like if I get cut from WWE, you know, I've got nothing. I'm done. I'm finished. Zack Ryder does not have the same appeal maybe he would have had 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, I think he'd get plenty of bookings on the independent scene. He could still, you know, play that gimmick up for all it's worth. But I think he may have peaked. And so maybe he missed that opportunity. But, you know, I think he's just unhappy in the position he's in, legitimately unhappy. He's got nothing to lose. You know, it's not like he's trashing the company. He's just going on there. I think he's trying to be entertaining, but I think there's a lot of honesty in those tweets. I think he's just really upset with the position that he's in. He wishes he was used more and wishes he was used better. And those are his legitimate tweets. And frankly, there's a reason why I kind of, the sad tweet segment when I do it, which is most weeks, not every week, was kind of named after him. It's almost like the honorary Zack Ryder Sad Tweet of the Week Award. And he was winning the award left and right when I started that segment because he would put these tweets out. They were legitimately sad. It was pathetic. I mean, it really makes him come across like just a pathetic, sad sap. And maybe that's what he wants. I don't necessarily think that's such a good thing. But I think it's just a cry for attention. I don't think it's something the company is telling him to do. Barry from Hawaii, what is the most painful thing you have ever seen in a wrestling match? I would say it is a tie between John Cena's punches and Rosa Mendez's kicks. I can't rank one higher than the other. They're equally bad. And finally here, Manny from Los Angeles. Do you think Vince McMahon is Walt Disney and Hulk Hogan is his Mickey Mouse? No. I think it would be more like Sega stealing Mario away from Nintendo right after he started to get hot. That'd be a way that I would describe it. You know, Hogan was already a big name before he went back to WWE. He had really built a name for himself up in the AWA. So it's not like Vince got him and kind of made him a big star. No, Vince got him when he was already a big star and made him a bigger star. Hogan was the big name in the Twin Cities and even in Japan. So I guess in that respect, he had the international appeal, but Vince took him and just made him a national hero. So I think it's not quite the same thing. You know, Mickey Mouse, who the fuck was Mickey Mouse before Walt Disney came along, right? Obviously, Walt Disney made Mickey Mouse. Not quite the same thing with Hogan and Vince. If you have questions, keep emailing me. TheSolomonster@gmail.com is the place to send those emails. Please include your name and where you are from. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster is my handle. We just recently broke through 10,000 followers on there, so thank you very much to everybody who helped make that happen. If you are not among those 10,000, I don't know what you're waiting for. Get on there and start following me. I'll be live tweeting during the Extreme Rules show tonight and during Raw on Monday, or at least as much of it as I can stomach. So follow me on there. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is my profile page. We also have a fan page on Facebook that you can like and a private discussion group that you can apply for membership to. All you got to do is type in the full name of this podcast in the Facebook search bar, and probably all three of those things will come up, including my profile page. And you can subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheSolomonster. There hasn't been a ton of new content up there recently because life got in the way, unfortunately, but I do hope to get some new stuff up there soon. And so when new videos are posted, you will be alerted if you are a subscriber. So hit the subscribe button on there. And the one thing I would do here, I would ask for those of you, and not everybody believes in this sort of thing, but if you are the sort of person who does, prayers are certainly welcome for me and my family. This week, there's some stuff going on. I'm not quite sure yet exactly what's going on, but I've got a, I don't know, I've got this feeling I can't seem to shake. Hopefully in the next week or two, I'll know what we're dealing with here, and all that's all I'll say on that for now. But if you are somebody who believes in that sort of thing, certainly prayers are much welcome and needed for us this week, so that would be very much appreciated. And we will be back, hopefully, with a brand new podcast next weekend. That would be episode 381. Actually, I think next Saturday is the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight. So I may not be able to do a show before then. So I'll just give my prediction now. I'm not a fan of the guy. I think he's a pompous jackass. But you can't deny the success he's had. He's a hell of a fighter. And he's unbeaten. And so if I were to put money down on this fight, which I'm not, but if I did, Money Mayweather is my pick. I'm going with Floyd in this fight. No offense to Manny, but yeah, Mayweather's my pick. So we'll be back then with a new show. Until then, be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here for number 381 next week. And until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
Whatever happened to real men on this show? Can you imagine, in any other era of WWE, dressing down your top star the way that Stephanie McMahon did to John Cena on Monday night? They've done this with Cena, they've done this with Bryan, they've done it with Dolph, they've done it with Ryback, they did it with Rollins. Remember the infamous episode where Big Show was on his knees in the middle of the ring crying for his job? Tears are just streaming down this guy's face. This guy's 7 feet tall, 450 pounds, he's in the ring crying. He's a giant. Yeah, he's a giant pussy.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.